Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another special edition of the Feuersteins Fire American Soccer Show. Tonight, we're going to review Sunday night's USL Championship League final as Real Monarchs, the MLS-affiliated club to Real Salt Lake, defeats the two-time, no longer defending champions, Louisville City.
Mm-hmm.
That, my friends, was an excellent final. That, my friends, was probably soccer at the highest level in the second division of U.S. soccer. What we saw on Sunday night on ESPN2, what we saw, it was unreal. It was unbelievable. It was just absolutely fantastic of a wonderful night of playoff championship soccer that we are accustomed to expecting. You know what we saw? A lot of back and forth. Chances galore. You know, goalkeeping was unreal as well. My goodness. David Ochoa for Real Monarchs. What an amazing night he had to make several huge saves in the second half to force the hand of Louisville City. And then after everything was said and done, Real Monarchs found a way to go forward, and they claimed their first ever USL Championship title. It was unbelievable, stupendous. It was magnificent on how Jaimison Olave, the former MLS central defender, the former Colombian defender, running Real Monarchs and just finding a way. The team didn't need any motivation. All they needed, basically, was the proper tactics, the proper formation. He gave it to them, and they earned their title. Louisville City, John Hackworth. You know, he's done a lot for the game, youth level, MLS, USL now. He had a hand sharing the first sharing a title when James O'Connor left to go to Orlando City of MLS last year. The year before that, John O'Connor finding a way to get his club into the final for the first time after losing in the Eastern Conference Finals in 2016, winning the title for the first time for Louisville City in 2017. Hackworth comes in 2018. And 2019, Hackworth does it again until the final, where the hopes of a three-peat were dashed. And let me just say this. It takes a lot, after watching some USL action, watching what we've seen in these clubs whenever they come to Montclair State University's soccer park, when they take on New York Red Bulls too, to see how talented that side is in Louisville, they are going to be dangerous. Very, very dangerous throughout the entire USL existence. And once they move into the Lynn Family Stadium, their 15,000 seat and standing room only stadium, to watch that being built, to seeing another jewel of a soccer stadium in this country, it makes me proud to not only be an American soccer fan, covering American soccer, but for the future of our sport, the future of the sport in our country, I should say. We're getting closer and closer to having all of our clubs in all leagues, hopefully, having their own stadiums and no longer having to borrow venues or get kicked out of a venue because the owner is a baseball team, a Major League Baseball team. That's going to kick you out because what comes first? Their team in the playoffs. This, my friends, has been unbelievable. This, my friends, has been unreal to watch what we have seen on Sunday night, November the 17th, over at the soccer stadium on the campus of the University of Louisville. And even though it was a college soccer stadium still, though, much better than being over at Louisville Slugger Park, where the grounds crew would rather just cough up the health of the grass field, of the outfield and the infield surrounding the pitcher's mound. They would rather just cough that up and say, whatever, try and play on this. No. Louisville City did it the right way. They have been doing it the right way. And look what's going to happen now. They will have a venue of their own. It's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. I can't wait to see that happen. But back to this matchup. You saw chances taken. You saw great shots taken. Fantastic goals converted. And then at the end of the 90 minutes, whatever else was added in stoppage time, either in the first half or the second half, you saw the best two sides, the best side in the East and the best side in the West, fighting for that trophy, fighting for that huge moment of trying to earn a championship. One side going for three in a row, the other side going for number one. Hackworth, Olave, fantastic jobs by both men, getting them prepared for this final. But as they always say, someone's got to win, someone's got to lose. And unfortunately for Louisville City, they will not get the three-peat that they wanted very, very badly. Here's a great stat that I did not even know about. In professional soccer, one club has not won a championship title in three consecutive seasons. It also hasn't happened in the NFL. It's happened in the National Hockey League, the one that I remember, of course, you know, in the early 80s. The New York Islanders, of course, they won four straight Stanley Cup titles. Back in the old days, it was either Montreal or Toronto or Boston or Montreal or Toronto, maybe Detroit. Never, ever anyone else finding ways to get three titles in a row, those Stanley Cup titles back in the original 6 days. And, of course, the last team to go back-to-back-to-back before they got their fourth, the last I checked that I saw was the New York Islanders, 1980, 1981, 1982. NBA, it's happened. But you know what? All I got to say is this. It is absolutely, unbelievably fantastic. It's been absolutely fantastic. And you know what? You hope to see more and more of these types of matches, because you know what? The USL has done an amazing job to build the sport in their divisions. League One, of course, was absolutely great. But, yeah, I have to say this. I think we've seen more and more action in USL Championship than I can remember in the past. And joining me right now is the man that watched that final, calling it with Mike Watts, Tyler Terrence doing the sidelines, the analyst for ESPN and USL Action. Of course, Devin Kerr joins me. Devin, 24 hours later, after crowning a new USL Championship League side, I think you can definitely say this. This was probably the best final we have ever witnessed so far in the United Soccer Leagues.
Yeah, that's an easy one for me. Yeah, you know, coming in, I said that the matchup, and I apologize to everybody, by the way, my voice is a little off, but the amount of work that we've had to do and stressed it a little bit, I sound a bit off, so I apologize there. But 100%, it's definitely the final leading in that I was most enticed about. And people questioned me about that, and they said, well, what about last year? And I said, yeah, you know, Lou City was great, Phoenix was great, but, you know, there you're missing your star power, no Chris Cortez, no Cameron Lancaster. You can basically track back every single year, and you know you've got contrasting styles, this, that, and the other. But this was the year, even without Douglas Martinez, that you felt like, okay, we've got a real matchup here, and it played out to a T. There were tactical adjustments all over the place. I was really impressed by both coaches. You know, we'll dive a bit deeper into that, but I think that coming into it, a lot of people gave too much credit to Louisville City. And I'm not saying Louisville City didn't deserve it, but I felt that in the sense of people pegged it as a little bit of, oh, they're going to win three in a row. They're at home. They've never lost. I don't think the Real Monarchs got enough credit. And I'm not saying, hey, I told you so, but, you know, we have a podcast of our own, Three Honest Lads, and myself, Michael Watts, who was doing play-by-play, Tyler Terrence, who you mentioned, did the sideline. We all pick Real Monarchs. And I don't mean that as a sign of disrespect to Louisville City. Just having an idea of the adjustments that were going to be made and in which manner felt like it served the Real Monarchs better.
Then let me ask you this. What was it different of a job that Jaimison Olave did, the former center back in MLS for Real Salt Lake and the New York Red Bulls? What was it about his tactics? What was it about having his players being maybe an edge more forward than Louisville's John Hackworth?
It's a great question, and you really have to track back to early October, end of September, where Real Monarchs went on the road. And this was the start, and the organization will tell you as well, anybody that's within it, of their beautiful run of form, where they go on the road on September 28th. They played at Reno, and they beat Ian Russell's squad 2-1. They followed that up, by the way, about 10 or 11 days later. I think it was October 9th or 10th. And then they had another game 3 days later. So they played Reno, they followed up with a win at home against Orange County, and then they went on the road to Phoenix. So they started this run as load management, where they felt like the personnel that they had was going to better suit them within this three-back system. Now, people will say, oh, it's a three, it's a five. I'll tell you right now, it's a five. Tate Schmidt, Noah Powder, James Moberg, whoever's played in that wing-back position, they are so offensively minded. It's much more suited to the style of what you see out of Atlanta United and what they try and funnel down as compared to a Nashville or a Pittsburgh. And long story short, you go back, that's when they started the three-back system. They did it as load management. They like how it played out, but they still weren't convinced. So they go back to a four, 3 games later against Austin. Then last game of the regular season, Sacramento Republic, they toy with both. It's more of a hybrid where they start in four, they rotate the three, and that's where they did their best, where it was a more traditional three and the other 2 times that they tried it. But when you did the Sacramento game on October 19th, they hosted, that was really a defining moment for this team because it showed guys like Tate Schmidt. It wasn't just, hey, we can sit in the three-back, Tate can rotate into the four. James Moberg can rotate back. Luke Mulholland and Justin Portillo were tactically brilliant because not just in this game, but in games past where Justin Portillo is always going to be the sixth. He is the concrete in the middle of the field. But Luke Mulholland is that extension. He gives them the ability to stretch the game a little bit, but it's balancing a little bit of the left side where he tends to rotate to a bit more. Jack Blake will come to the right a little bit. And so they give them a little bit of stretch in the middle, but Blake's still going to make that step as the 10. And that's where this team, Louisville, got into trouble because you start with the opening 18 minutes. Now, I went back and rewatched the game today. 18 minutes. Are you ready for this? They had 12 legitimate chances. Call them half chances or not, 12 chances in the opening 23 minutes, three of which could have easily ended up in the back of the net. I said it on air.
Oh, yeah.
Right around the 14th, 15th minute, I said, listen, You need to find a way to put a second one away, because I promise you this, if you do not, it will come back to haunt you, and that's exactly what happened.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, how many times had Louisville had big-time chances to punch in a second, to punch in a third, a fourth? I mean, this could have been a 7-up game, if you know what I mean. This could have been 7-0 within maybe the first 10, 20 minutes if Louisville City took more time to convert their chances than they missed, or David Ochoa making those spectacular saves, and then Holt opening the scoring for Real Monarchs in the 25th minute. And I mean, that was a very good goal. He took it well, found the back of the net to level the score at 1.
I joked with the coaching staff after the game, and I said to Matt Glazer and their general manager, the ball starts to rotate back over. Jack Blake makes a great little step into the top of the 18. And I see the body, like I'm watching the game in person. I look up, I see a white shirt starting to step to the top of the 18. Jack Blake picks his head up, and right as he plays it, I look and go, no, because you've got a trailing center back, and it's Eric Holt. But, you know, we did a little spoof piece for our podcast, Rihanna Slides, with Eric Holt and Kalen Ryden joking that, you know, they could go after the golden boot for the playoffs for 2019, and, you know, how would that look in 2020? And we joked around a little bit, but look, it was well executed. And that's the confidence that the team has, where it's not just, okay, you know, how do we get guys like Kyle Coffey, Michael Chang, you know, Douglas Martinez didn't appear in the final, but how do we get our playmakers involved? But then where does the secondary opportunities come from? Whether it's Jack Blake trying to step forward, or Justin Portillo or Luke Mulholland trying to put balls into the corner, second, third, fourth. That perseverance is what got them here in that beautiful run of form over the final 10 games or so, but they lacked it in that opening 18 minutes, and they started to step up a little bit. So you start to rotate out. They started to give Louisville City a taste of exactly what Lou City was giving them in that exact same time frame, where there was so much rotation. And, you know, you looked at what Lou City started with, a massive amount of tempo. They were going very quick, high press and the counter press. But I really liked how they played off of each other. You got guys like Brian Ownby, who he could play up top on his own and then stretch the game out on the wide. Now, this time they put Spencer in the 9, Ownby out on the left, but that's a normal look for them. And Hopino was dropping in, Ownby was dropping in, and McCabe and Rasmussen were overlapping on the rights. But Speedy was still sitting there, and there was just so much rotation between that front five. So then the Real Monarchs started to counterpunch a little bit. And I use some of the same terminology, but it's so relevant because this was a heavyweight title fight that this wasn't sparring right away. These guys were throwing huge punches. And, you know, the Monarchs were very lucky not to be knocked out. And finally, you started to get guys like Chang. Kyle Coffey became a bit more disciplined. But more importantly, they needed to be on the ball a bit more. And asking Jack Blake at halftime, I said, what was that conversation like? Because you guys, you were down and out. I mean, this game was practically over. Even at the Eric Holt goal in the 25th minute, you saw some momentum change. They get the goal. But it was, okay, well, what is the response going to be? And it still took another 10 minutes or so. When you hit the 35th, 50th, 40th minute, you go, okay, Lou City has a problem. And they just said at halftime, listen, you know, we had to find a way to get on the ball a bit more. That's why we've been so successful. And everybody said we were really lucky that we didn't go behind further. We were just happy for the chance that we were tied. And, you know, grateful that come the second half, we knew what we were going to do.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and that second goal, though, in the 45th minute, the last minute of regulation in the first half before stoppage time, Conrad Pliwa. Now, Conrad, before coming to Real Monarchs, was a member of the New York Red Bulls 2 club in USL action. And, you know, last year, and I'm sure you're aware of it, Conrad had a heart condition.
There was a stroke.
Just
yeah,
one day he
stroke.
Woke up, he wasn't feeling. Yeah, a stroke. Yeah, he had a stroke. He missed some time in the first match. He came back for Red Bulls 2 at Montclair, scored a goal. I think it was a game-winning goal. And, of course, at the end of the year, the Red Bulls let him go. And look what happens in 2019. He jumps on Real Monarchs through Real Salt Lake. He scores the match winner. I mean, that was probably the best header he's probably put on frame, you know, in a very, you know, in a probably in a very long time.
It was interesting coming into the game how, with all due respect to people covering the match, I think some people don't understand necessarily what goes into these teams. And there was a lot of talk about how young this team was, and I totally disagree. David Ochoa on the back line, I get, you know, youth national team player. Whether or not he makes the jump to Greg Berhalter's side is still yet to be decided, but obviously a great talent. But guys like Kalen Ryden, Conrad Plua, you know, Eric Holt's the young one, but even, you know, James Moberg, Luke Mulholland, Justin Portillo, you can continue to rotate forward, and pretty much everybody else is a seasoned veteran. And some of them might be only in their mid-20s, but still 100, 150, 200-plus appearances. Don't think this team was given enough credit. And, again, it was their ability to, okay, the first one doesn't work. Where's the second? Where's the third? And they didn't have that ability in the opening 25 minutes. If you go and rewatch the play, though, there's a big mistake here by Paco Craig. He's a great defender and a guy that I'm not calling out by any means. I thought he kept them in a lot of the match. But, you know, there's certain points in time in a match where you have to go, okay, this guy got it wrong and it was a bad mistake. And it was a combination of Paco Craig and Chris Hubbard. Chris Hubbard, their goalkeeper from Lou City, is a bit hesitant coming off the line. And he stutters a little bit, so he's late arriving. Paco Craig still has proper positioning. Instead, on the slow replay, you can see it. He waits for the ball. If he attacks this like he should and puts a shoulder on Conrad Plua, the other center back he's doing battle with, this ball is a 50-50 at best, probably run 90% of the time by Paco Craig. Instead, he just goes for it instead of going after it, doesn't lean into it, doesn't get a body on him, and Plua just puts it away. And that was the real turning point of the match.
It really was. Just to go on the Louisville side for a second, Brian Ownby has been a terror for Louisville City. I mean, he, every time he has the ball, whether he's attacking with the ball, either, you know, he's got the ball somewhere along the corners, whether he delivers the corners or he is by the corners, and he bends in a good ball to set up a scoring chance. I mean, Louisville City is lucky to have him. And he's been such a terror for Louisville when they are attacking, and he's just such a savvy player when he's out on the pitch.
Yeah, he's nice, and you know the versatility of the Lou City team is something that's always impressed me. After the end of the 2018 season, knowing that Cameron Lancaster was going to step off, that was, okay, wow, you know, how do you replace all the goals by a guy who, over the course of the season, both regular and postseason, put 26 in the back of the net? Who are they going to go pick up? The answer was no one. No one in the sense of, you know, a true out-and-out number nine is the goal scorer. And I mean that with all due respect to guys like Luke Spencer and Brian Ownby, but they put Brian Ownby up there, and he's not an out-and-out number nine, but he's willing to play a role. And with all the injuries that this team sustained all season long, you know, Luke Spencer was out earlier on. Paolo Del Piccolo, their captain, you know, their true number six, who led this team through thick and thin alongside Luke Spencer and George Davis IV, the triumvirate last year, he got a couple injuries. Pretty much everybody had a knock at some point in time. Now, McCabe, Patrick Mann, everybody got hurt. But Brian Ownby, concussions as well. It was unfortunate they didn't have him more, but he still found a way to be impactful. Was actually quite surprised that he didn't find the back of the net a bit more. You know, only 2 goals in 23 appearances, but still, he found a way to supplement a little bit with assists, and that's his speed. That's his IQ as well. I'll be real curious to see how this plays out in the offseason for Lou City, because you have guys like Luke Spencer who, you know, his body's been through a lot. George Davis is 32 years old. Paolo Del Piccolo coming off an injury-ridden season. Brian Ownby dealing with concussions. I'm wondering what this team looks like in 2020. I mean that in a good sense, but a lot of big key names that they've been able to retain. Look, 16 players coming back from 2018, 11 from 2017, 6 from 16. You can continue to go back. They find a way each and every year to maintain the core. And it was unfortunate that we didn't see guys like Brian Ownby a bit more, but I think you're going to see a lot of changes come 2020.
You know, I got to ask you this, and, you know, granted, you know, everyone steps up when a player is no longer on that side. And during the broadcast, were you thinking to yourself while watching this final in front of you, Were you thinking, boy, I think Cameron Lancaster might be missed here, especially in that second half?
I'll be honest. I have no problem saying that I didn't think that. And the reason I say that is this team has the ability to have that chameleon-like nature. And even when Real Monarch started to respond a little bit, at no point in time in this season had we seen a point where this team stopped creating. Maybe not scoring, that's one thing, but stopping to create is a whole other fashion where, you know, they could be on the road at Nashville. And, you know, they lost at Nashville towards the tail end of this season. That was a late September, early October game. I was on the call for the road feed of it. Here you go, October 8th. They lost 2-1 in a game where Lou City controlled the entire match. They lost 2-1, but they created a lot. And it was the same thing with a lot of other games that they had seen coming down the stretch where they created a lot, didn't necessarily score, but they got better as the season went on. That didn't happen in this game where they basically created again in that opening 20 minutes. And then from there it was, okay, what's next? You know, I have a great relationship with John Hackworth. I admire him a lot. And I felt really bad because I felt like he was making the changes. There was one that I will question. You can ask me about that after, but felt like they had made the appropriate changes, but they weren't creating. I don't put that on the coaching staff. I put that on the players. And these guys are guys who always are able to execute. But if you go back and look, if you watch live, whatever it may be, they just stopped playing. And it's not that the effort wasn't there. It's the decision-making was lacking. It was, okay, what worked before? That's not working now. Where do we go? And they didn't have an answer. And it's not like an answer wasn't being provided. It was, okay, we overloaded the left side a little bit with Mal McCabe, Oscar Jimenez opening 20 minutes. How do we now get Pat McMahon involved on the right? And when you look at the possession numbers, it's actually quite interesting because they did start to move the ball to the right, but you're looking at 25, 30 yards from goal, but then they reverted to their own ways. They didn't change at all. The evolution was extremely lacking from Louisville City, where now McCabe, Rasmussen, they didn't get on the ball as much as they were. They started to become a lot more direct to the point that, look, with 20 minutes to go, Daniel, they were playing a long ball. And, you know, I'm not going to mention the conversation of that I had with which person from the coaching staff for Lou City, but let's just say that they were very disappointed in the players' actions in the sense that, you know, they got away from what they were so good at. That's a hard thing to deal with because when things aren't going right in a game, emotion is against you. Momentum is 100% putting your backs up against the wall. Sometimes as a player, and I've been involved in it, you just start to make bad decisions. That's exactly what happened in Lou City. You can't blame them. That's just how it played out.
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, give credit to Real Monarchs for basically disrupting how they want to play. I mean, give them credit. I mean, they found a way to stop Louisville City from attacking, from going forward, for anything and everything. I mean, for goodness sakes, I mean, what we saw there was basically not just an attacking side like Real Monarchs, but if you think about it, their defending was pretty good. And, you know, why not have a center back as your head coach that's done it all in MLS?
So, interestingly enough, I'll be releasing a piece tomorrow morning of a tactical breakdown that we actually did for the open of this game. Unfortunately, because of time constraints and the storylines that were going on, we weren't able to put it in. But my breakdown was of the defensive shape. It wasn't of the offensive capability. And that's where you start again. I'm going to revert back, and I've done it twice, but that opening 20-minute segment I talked about for Lou City, where they were so successful wasn't just what their players were doing offensively, but it was where they were able to stretch the defensive shape of the Real Monarchs. And what they were doing, as I mentioned, Justin Portillo is the one who always sits centrally located. He doesn't rotate a lot. He plays the six. He played a very similar role at the Charleston Battery for Mike Anhauser. And they were letting him stay there, but Luke Mulholland and Jack Blake were getting pulled very wide to the point where they made, whether it was on the right or the left, they were making Noah Powder sit as the fourth, which the Monarchs are accustomed to, but they weren't accustomed to Jack Blake being pulled to an outside mid position. Conversely, same thing on the left. Tate Schmidt could drop back in next to Kalen Ryden, and Luke Mulholland was coming out. So they were creating a shape that was very flat for the Monarchs, but more importantly, they were very spaced out. So guys could rotate in and out. Once the Monarchs recognized this, especially around like the 35th minute mark, even after their first goal, because The first goal was against the run of play. It was off a set piece. That's fine. Momentum swinger. But 35 minutes in, that's where they got their best, where they recognized that, okay, if we start to pull a little bit, how do we adjust to this? Jack Blake recognized, okay, I can't necessarily follow that runner out. If Oscar Jimenez wants to rotate out there, sometimes you have to give a player space. Where Noah Powder can still drop back in, but he has to account for the space in front of him. So if he rotates over and Jimenez starts to step, then he steps up, conversation with Eric Polt behind him, and they just communicate. That's what they were lacking. And the defensive shape was brilliant moving forward. I was beyond impressed. It reverted back to what this team is really capable of. You saw it against El Paso. I really go back to the November 1st meeting with Phoenix, because coming into the game, I asked Phoenix Rising. I said, do you think they have the guts, if you will? I use different terminology, but it's not PG. So I won't say it out loud, but do you think they have the guts to sit in the three back? Phoenix said no. They did not give them credit. And to be fair, if you sat in a four just weeks prior and you beat them, why would you change? That is why the coaching and the defensive shape was so good. And they said, you know what, we're going to do it again. And they reverted back to that system where they stacked their boys a little bit. It was more of a 3-1-2-2-2. And you can interpret that however you want. Tactically, I could talk about it for hours. But more importantly, the way that you break it down is they were knocked off their rocker for the opening 20 minutes. Conversations on the sidelines. The boys start to respond to each other. They believe in themselves, and they gain that momentum. And to be honest, after halftime, you just looked at it and said, okay, this is no problem whatsoever for the Monarchs.
Oh, absolutely. And they go in and get that title. You know, I have to say this. When the third goal was scored by Noah Powder, I didn't think it was going to go on frame. I thought it might be either off the post on the near side, or it was going to go just wide. And it shocked me when it went in, looking at the replays, what a great ball he bent that kisses the inside of the near post along the near side of the pitch and into the back of the net. That, Devin, was just an unbelievable goal, meant to do it. You can tell he meant to do it. He wanted that third goal. He wanted that final nail in the coffin, even though probably they probably wanted a fourth. But you can tell that one really was the dagger that was struck into the hearts of every Louisville City player and supporter.
This is one of my more favorite stories that you can promote a little bit here. Is 100% agree with you in the fact that he was going to goal, he was going for glory and looking for that third goal. Whether or not they got the fourth after is a whole nother story, but I joked with the coaching staff, the way that he hits this ball, he mishits it. Now, the funny part is the way you play about it is he looks like he's trying to go near post or maybe put it low on the ground and the ball knuckles on him. Chris Hubbard, by the way, not his best performance. I felt really bad for the young man who picked this team up for Lou City off the mat. So many goalkeeping issues all season long. Just not his best night. He got picked apart. But it's a funny story with Noah Powder. So I said, you know, joking with the coaching staff again, go to Matt Glazer. I even said it to the general manager, Daniel Agner. I said, there's no way Noah meant to hit that. They all laughed their butts off and said, no. He mishit that, knuckled it in the bottom corner. He was definitely looking to do something else. When I asked Noah, very confidently, not cocky, because if you've ever met the young man, and if you haven't had the pleasure, he's full of a lot of confidence. He's not cocky by any means. He's very humble. But I said to him, I was like, Noah, you know, I'm watching you, bro. You mishit that. You know you did. Admit it to me. And he looked right at me. He paused for a second, gives me a little wink, and goes, meant to do it the whole time. But regardless, appropriate space, appropriate time. Right? How good is that, right? A player, he'll never admit when he gets it wrong. Right. I mean, myself admitted. If I mishit something, I was like, no, absolutely. I meant to hit it just like that. I kept the goalkeeper questioning. But I think the credit you have to give here is the rotation in space, his ability to dictate one-on-one on the outside, quick little cut in, and that little pickoff on the far post.
Absolutely. I think he meant to do it, but you never know if they're just pretending to say, I meant to do it. It's just unbelievable. You know, here's what's also unbelievable. And going into, like, other storylines involved in this matchup, let's talk about Speedy Williams. Three consecutive USL Cup championship final matches. Wins for Red Bulls 2 back in 2016, beating Swope Park Rangers, gets two more going into his first 2 years with Louisville City, tried to go for four straight titles, unfortunately fell short. But for him to get three titles in 4 years, that's impressive, regardless of which league you're in. I mean, I don't know anyone that's had, you know, consecutive titles won in the USL.
He takes the cake by far. And, you know, that was a player that, if you track back to when they brought him in 2017, how was he going to respond? Because I'm going to, if I'm wrong here, by the way, feel free to correct me, but I'm going to try and do this off the top of my head of guys who he played with. Now, I know the goalkeeper, they were stacked, but Ryan Mara was the goalkeeper back then. But they had guys like Zach Carroll, Justin Billiou, bigger names, Aaron Long, Conrad Plouy, you talked about it as well. Noah Powder was actually an academy player who made a bunch of appearances that year as well. And look at the guys that were in front of him, Tyler Adams, Derek Etienne. I know Vincent Bezicourt was there, Brandon Allen, Junior Flemings. That's about as far as I can get into that. And I do apologize because I pride myself on having the ability to talk about that team. But, you know, it's a little bit – I think I got 10 or 12. What was he going to be?
No, you got him all right.
Okay, good.
No, you got him all right, actually. You got him all
there
right.
There we go.
Yeah.
You know, what was he going to be for Lou City? And 2017 – it was good, not necessarily what they wanted him to be. 2018, they would probably replicate the same sentiments. But at the tail end of 2018, a guy who scored some quality goals in playoff appearances, it was a true testament to where this kid wanted his career to go. Because at 27 years old, you're still a kid. You're approaching the prime of your career, but I mean that respectfully. You're still a young man forming into a true professional and under some big-name coaches. And what is your next step going to be? He's responded to that where he's basically become a mainstay for the Jamaican national team over the past 12 months. He's gotten some big international appearances. And if he's not the MVP for this team, I'll be very surprised. A second behind him would be Sean Tosh. That's another conversation. But Speedy Williams, you know, he stepped right in. When he departed for international duty, he didn't miss a beat when he came back in, just sitting in the six. And it didn't matter if they played in a three. It didn't matter if they played in a 4-2-3-1, a 4-3-3. John Hackworth, in his little black notebook, which he literally has and sometimes wakes up in the middle of the night to write ideas down, he gave these guys so many different ideas, and they were always willing to answer the questions of them. Speedy Williams was one of the main reasons, if not the main reason, they were able to do so, again, next to Sean Tosh, because his reach is so massive. And you saw it last night in the final where, whether it was getting overexposed in the first half when the Monarchs started to respond and a tackle from behind where he had to go on a 30-yard run, you saw the same thing in the second half where it's a 2-1 game, ball gets knocked over the top, and you ask your Jamaican to make a 40-45-yard run, chase someone down in open space, and make a tackle from behind in the box, mind you, from a six. That is such a big ask. And he never paused. There was no hesitation by him whatsoever. That's a true testament to his character. And to be fair, it's a true testament to the belief in Speedy Williams, because everything you hear out of this organization is about culture. And it's about the next man up. It's about believing in the person next to you or the guys off the bench or the 23. You know, they talk about going on the road, not starting the way they want to, but getting texts from everybody who didn't necessarily make the travel squad. Guys like Speedy included. You know, Taylor Pay texting Speedy Williams. Speedy Williams doing the same thing to Paco Craig. That's what all these guys were about. And Speedy Williams was the true embodiment. He had a really nice shift last night.
No, he really did. And he's been unbelievable. Speedy, Junior Flemings, you know, the Noah Powder, the Caribbean connection that started off with the Red Bulls too. And of course, Conrad Plewa, you know, you go from one of the top academies in MLS and, you know, one of the top USL, sides that is owned by an MLS side, and to see Real Monarchs doing the same thing that the New York Red Bulls did 2 years ago. That has to say a lot. I mean, for goodness sakes, 2015 LA Galaxy 2, losing to Rochester Rhinos and Bob Lilly's Rochester Rhinos at the time. Red Bulls 2, Swope Park Rangers, now I understand they'll be called Sporting Kansas City 2 in 2020. You know, that's three sides, Real Monarchs this year. That's four sides out of the last 5 or 6 years, because Swope Park Rangers has been to at least two consecutive USL Cup final attempts, losing to both Louisville and to Red Bulls too. You just have to say that, you know, MLS so far, not so much success on the field when it comes to, you know, the top clubs in the first division, but to see the fruits of their labors being in the USL Championship finals, I mean, that's even doubly proud.
You're spot on, and I had this conversation with the general manager from Real Monarchs, Daniel Eger, last night, how, you know, these teams are trying to find a way to do it right. And what do I mean by that? I mean by that as in, this is a business at the end of the day. And let's remove, with people that are listening, forget the buy-in fees for MLS. Forget the cost for a stadium in USL. Let's just talk about the operational standards. This is common sense for any club around the world, but the execution is really difficult to get right. So I'm going to compare two squads. And people are going to laugh at me, but there's a reason I'm going to do it. I'm going to compare Bayern Munich and Real Monarchs. And by no means am I comparing the level of play or anything like that whatsoever. I'm trying to compare apples to apples, and I'll break it down for you. So Real Monarchs were tired. They were tired of having academy players who weren't necessarily making the next step to the Real Monarchs. They were then tired of those guys not jumping up to Real Salt Lake, and they needed to bridge the gap. Now, this club has a model of consistency. If you look at 2017 to 2018, there was only a three-point difference. And everything they're about is they want to win. They want to win trophies. They want to be competitive. They are trying a way to bridge the gap between the academy to the Monarch to the first team, and they're starting to echo of that. You know, there was a parting of ways with Martin Vasquez. You know, more importantly, after that, you lose your talisman, and people are going to laugh, but Mike Pecky was the first team coach for Real Salt Lake. That team is what leads this entire organization. So you're trying to showcase what this is supposed to look like. So when you lose your identity from a head coaching standpoint for both the Monarchs and then Real Salt Lake, how are you going to respond? The precedent has now been set by the second team. Listen to what I just said there, by the second team. It's been set by the Monarchs. That's not a disrespectful comment to by Real Salt Lake. But if you look at what they've been able to do tactically from the Monarchs, I promise you this, they're going to find a way to do it up top. Because you get guys like Brooks Lennon and Tate Schmidt that are starting to figure out that outside back position. James Moberg, of course, is a seasoned veteran who knows how to do it. Now Noah Powder. They're going to find a way to work that system in. Now, where does the conversation with Bayern Munich come in? It's the same sentiment where both of these teams were tired of going out and putting money into their academy and their youth programs and not seeing it fulfilled into the senior level. Now, whether that's their second team in Real Monarchs or moving into the MLS level for Real Salt Lake, same thing for Bayern Munich too, the reserves, whatever you want to call it, or Bayern Munich, they were tired of spending money in the offseason in the transfer market when they had spent so much money to develop these guys at the academy level and just wasn't getting it right. And that's a testament to guys like James and Olave, to Matt Glazer, to the guys in the front office, like the general manager for Real Monarchs, Daniel Eger, and Elliot at Real Salt Lake, where they understand what they're trying to do, but the execution is there, much like the level of play that's on the field. And now how do you replicate it? They answer those questions and more, especially over the course of the season, where we always talk about high level of play, how do teams evolve. Lou City is one of those teams that's been able to do it for so many years. We asked whether or not Phoenix Rising was going to be able to do that after the 20-game win streak. They couldn't check those boxes. Real Monarchs did that all and more. And now you look at, and I love this question that one of my executive producers asked me coming in. Now you look at, what does this look like for this organization going forward, for the Monarchs, for the Academy, for Real Salt Lake in 2020 and further? Because my producer said, guys like this that are within an MLS organization or an umbrella, what's it like for them? And being in these shoes in the past, I said, it's a fight. every day is a fight. And it's not the fact that this is a final. You're trying to go out and showcase yourself for contract arguments come the 2020 season, whether it's Luke Mulholland, who's had all those appearances for Real Salt Lake, guys like Justin Portillo, who earned a first-team contract, or Jack Blake, who finally gets himself healthy, or Michael Chang, who might be the most underrated player in the USL Championship. How do you now take that jump to the next level? Performances like the final we saw yesterday are the reason that this organization is starting to get it right, and these guys want to push that problem.
No, absolutely. I mean, this is what the MLS teams are doing. They want their academy kids to get a taste of how to play as a professional, and of course play the same way that the first team plays. And now you've got kids that are basically connected with the club, both in the USL level and the MLS level, and MLS clubs can now say, you know what, this kid's ready to go. Look what happened to Tyler Adams. Excuse me, Derek Etienne Jr.
Yep.
Conrad Pliwa, Speedy Williams, Noah Powder. I mean, you, and even Junior Flemings. You have kids, whether they're from the United States, Canada, the Caribbean, or even from Mexico, they get their opportunities. They go out, they play professional minutes in the level below, where USL Championship is, and then they're ready to go to be in the MLS level. A little bit faster, a little bit harder, but they are well aware of how to play the system that they are playing.
Tie it all together, and you take it's a systematic thing where, and I said this on air, where this is a squad that utilized 40-plus players. Think about that number, Daniel. 40-plus players that had appearances in the 18 this year. I don't care if you stepped on the field. If you have the opportunity to play, whether it's a backup goalkeeper, outside marking back, whatever it is, 40-plus players this organization accounted for within the Real Monarchs. That's obnoxious. But the fact that they could do that and still get better as the year went on, change coaches at both levels, change systems, and get this good, hats off. I am beyond impressed. I said it coming on air. Come playoff time, this team was playing at the highest level of any team that hit the playoffs. I'm not saying of all season long, because that's a whole other argument, but they were playing at the highest level of any team that hit the playoffs, and they deserved it. They won this. Again, coaches that were in Lou City organization, they said, look, at the end of the day, we played great for 20 minutes. We got away from what we were good at. The better team won here, and that's exactly what happened. And I want to tie into what you said about, you know, kind of bridging the gap, putting all of this together. You take the organization like Real Monarchs, combine it with the culture that we saw in the final between Real Monarchs and Lou City, guys that were tailgating, the ability to maintain players on a roster for an extended amount of time, the great stadium that has already been built in Harriman by the Real Monarchs, and the stadium that is currently being built in Butchertown by Lou City. This is what this country needs. People wonder at the international level how you take the next step. The answer is right in front of your face. Just start paying a little bit more attention. I'm not saying listen to me. I'm saying that the examples are there. And both of these organizations were true testaments to it. Now, it wasn't, they weren't hitting each and every bullet point, but there were bullet points to be had. And when you combine them all, both of these organizations represented what this country is looking for at the highest level. I was beyond impressed with the professionalism, with the culture, with everything that these teams were be able to put on the field. And to cap it off, what you said leading into this interview, this encompasses why this was the best final we've seen.
I absolutely agree. Talk about that broadcast, of course, yourself, Mike Watts, play-by-play, you're analyzing. Tyler Terrence, of course, at times play-by-play announcer, sideline reporter during obviously USL broadcast through ESPN+. Open Cup tournaments going all over the place here. You know, when you're talking about yourself and your broadcast partners, not counting the producer, obviously he does a great job too, but, you know, what was it like this year, like the entire year of USL Championship since the league has basically branched off and renamed everything as USL Championship for second division, USL League One for third division, USL League Two for the that's formerly known as the Premier Development League. In your mind, how successful has the USL been to supply U.S. soccer with players and at the same time getting them the ability to either move up, getting loaned out, sign with other MLS clubs, or having these kids that are part of MLS clubs and academies to get to the top.
So I'm going to start on the broadcast side of things, and I am of the belief, and anyone that knows me will tell you this, that I am of the belief that I am very grateful for the opportunities that are put in front of me. I would not be here without guys like Mike Watts, Tyler Terrans, the producers, directors, audio, camera, you name it, red hats on the field identifying players. No matter who it is, and I won't name any single player or people. I just referenced those two because it was yesterday. But all of the shows that I'm having the luxury of being involved in, I wouldn't be where I'm at because of them and the ability to get better. And you'll probably hear a lot of that from guys like Mike Watson, Tyler Terrans. And you know, we were a bit spoiled this season where, you know, we got to work together a bit more. And that evolution that we talked about for the teams took place within the three of us. Where, you know, we're fortunate to be around, like you said, Open Cup, USL Championship, and a lot of other things as well. But to be able to convey that knowledge in the proper terminology at a quality level is a difficult thing to do. I was honored to be next to those guys yesterday, and I thought they did a great job representing this league. I look forward to what that's going to look like going forward. Jake Edwards had some fun words to say at halftime and talked about that. But, you know, when you step into what does it look like in terms of setting a precedent from the academy standpoint and giving these guys the opportunity, you know, they're figuring it out. One of the concerns I have is when you go from club to country to college to club to country, how does that look? And I think we're seeing a lot of that right now, the frustrations and the growing pains, if you will, within the international spots and the club scene, where I still don't think tactically our guys are given enough knowledge, that the coaching may be there. Maybe our players aren't capable of it. Maybe the coaches aren't conveying it appropriately. I think we have great coaches. I think we have great players. But putting all of that together is a difficult one. Forget the argument of other sports and what this looks like if hockey's not there or football's not there. That's never going away. We are never going to be the preeminent sport in this country, and people need to understand that, and that's okay. But being the best at what we're capable of is where we're lacking. I think that we're starting to see certain areas where we're getting better, but even when, whether you agree with it or not with what's going on with Greg Berhalter and the men's national team, you can see the growing pains for sure, but if we don't pick a course and try and stay with it, what are we doing? Because people have to realize, again, I'm not advocating for Berhalter. I'm not disagreeing with it either. I'm giving a very neutral point of view here where he hasn't even been in charge for a year. And so if we don't give people chances, what are we doing? If you don't give someone the opportunity to learn, whether they're 10 or 22, what are we doing? Because I promise you, every other country gives them a chance. Now, they give you a different level to showcase it at. Guys like Jamie Vardy, who was cast aside and found a way to make his way back in and become a great talent for not just the Premier League, but for country. If we're not giving guys secondary chances and opening up our minds, what are we doing? And that's what these clubs are about. You know, Luce City isn't willing to go out. And you can agree with this or not, but they're not willing to go out when someone goes down and just go chase players or go, you know, throw a pocketbook at it. That's everybody's own opinion, but that's why they created the culture that's so successful. When Abdou Jam, the guy that they thought would come in after his brilliant career at UConn, came in, when he got a separated shoulder, they didn't say, screw you, you're done, or go pick somebody else up. They looked to talent. They said, okay, maybe Richie Ballard could get healthy and maybe we could finally bring him off the bench. Was there a way that maybe George Davis steps up a little bit? How about Napo Masoso? Magnus Rasmussen has to be the comeback story of the year because he hadn't scored basically anything for this squad all season long. You know, from 20, if you combined his 2015, 2016, 2018 season, because he was gone in 17, he went back to Sweden, I believe. Might have been Denmark, but he only had 12 goals. He scored 17 goals this year, including the goal in the final. a guy who coming into this year, they didn't think be a starter in the starting 11. How did that work out? And that's what we need to start focusing on. Guys in the Real Monarchs, where you look back, Conrad Plua, who, as you mentioned, health issues, you know, a great talent coming out of Seton Hall, loads of appearances for Red Bull 2, and they say, you know what, this project is over. We're not interested in that anymore. So he goes and plays under Preki, where he gets double-digit appearances, and basically is non-existent for that team. Lost in translation to a guy who was a mainstay for this back line all season long. That is what this country needs. That is what we should start focusing on. And there's plenty of people who are going to argue with me and bring it. I promise you. I'm happy to sit there and talk. And if you prove me wrong, I will bow down. I will humble it to you. But anybody that knows this game, anybody that knows this game globally and where this country needs to go, will echo the same sentiment. Start paying attention to what's going on, because the generational gap may have not been bridged, but we're starting to make strides. Let's all start to get on the same page and trying to make it a real impact globally within this country.
Before we sign off, three new clubs ready to come in, hopefully very quickly. We got East Bay, still not sure where they're going to be at the moment, but at, they are, I believe, the next ones up. Queensborough FC, run by former World Cup champion of Spain, David Villa, and the head coach of the San Diego Loyal SC, of course, former U.S. men's national team superstar Landon Donovan. With these clubs coming in, how exciting will it be to see them perform in USL action? And especially with Queensborough FC, USL outside of the New York Red Bulls will have an independent club inside the five boroughs.
Let's start with Landon Donovan. I'm pissed off that he's doing this. I mean that in a good way, by the way. I said this yesterday. I said, man, this guy just doesn't stop. His competitive nature, I am in awe of it. And it's amazing because, look, he dominates at youth level internationally and domestically. And, you know, he set precedence at every single level within this country. And, you know, I joked. I was like, why not? Let's go try our hand at ownership and general management and now coaching. Good for him. I think that's really, really cool. I wish them nothing but the best, and I can't wait to see him in action. I can't wait to see what that roster looks like for David Villa and what they're going to do. Let's put all of this together and branch it off of kind of what I alluded to earlier with Jake Edwards, where he talked at halftime about how promotion relegation is a real conversation right now, and it's happening. And, you know, the agreement between MLS and USL might not be there. It might never exist. I personally think it will, and that's going to take some time. That's a conversation that probably happened off air between you and I in an adult water or two, but you know, I think that it's a very real possibility. And Jake Edwards, the president of USL Championship, said it. He said that, look, we're going, or USL in general, excuse me. He said that, you know, it's something that we're heavily thinking after, and I think you should keep an eye on it. Head on a swivel, look next to you, look around you. That goes back to where I talked about talent scouting. You know, if you look at some of these teams, people that are fans of the Chicago Fire, they say, well, why should we have promotion relegation if we're one of the originals? You think Manchester United are saying that? You know, they're one of the oldest clubs. I mean, there's the Bolo. No, they're not, because it takes money to make money. I mean, you hear that, but it's true. And not every club is going to make money. I mean, I'm a massive, massive Liverpool fan. You'll never walk alone, true and true, red and white, bleed it. And we dropped a lot of money for a long time. There were some really, really rough days within the past decade, and they're back on top. And that didn't happen because they said, okay, it'll be gifted to us. It's a lot of hard work. It's spending money. It's scouting. It's culture. It's all of that that you put together. And all these organizations might not necessarily have all of them, but they're starting to find a way to put it all together. You know, I really admire what LAFC has done. And I'm curious to see what they're capable of doing through the academy and whether it's an affiliation, you know, spoken or not, with Phoenix Rising, whether they carry a team into the USL Championship. Not saying that's happening by any means, but it's figuring out what an identity is going to be and replicating that on a regular basis, because I think you can look at a lot of teams around MLS and say they don't have that. Teams like the Chicago Fire, teams like SC Cincinnati. I'm not knocking MLS teams right now, I want to be very clear, because you can say the same thing about USL teams. And I have no problem saying that, where they don't have a true identity. They got to find a way to do that. And when you start to tie guys like Landon Donovan, guys like David Villa, guys who have experienced a really high level of play, and more importantly, have been surrounded by really intelligent people, and they start to surround themselves with it. I think that's a really cool thing to think of, because whether it's in sporting or not, to take politics, you know, whether it's former presidencies, you know, a local mayor, those people might not always necessarily be the smartest people in the room. They're very educated, but they might not always be the smartest person. But what do? They usually surround themselves with really smart people. And I'm not making this a political conversation. I'm saying that you can find a way to make yourself successful without being the smartest or richest or most successful person in the room. That's how you become the smartest person, because you make steps in other areas that maybe other people can't recognize. I think you're seeing that out of clubs like San Diego, where Landon Donovan knows that he's got a good ownership group behind him. He thinks that he has a strong enough head on his shoulders to share the burden of all the roles that he's taking on. I'm not saying he doesn't, but that could be a learning curve. That could be a really smart move. Regardless, you know, they're willing to take that on. And that's something that I think other clubs need to start looking about, at where you don't necessarily need to say, hey, I'm going to throw my nose in the air and look down upon you. We're going to do it this way, because your ability to respond to extreme circumstances is the mark of a true champion. Tying that all together, the Real Monarchs were on the road losing early on. Organization-wide, if you can't make changes mid-year, and I'm not just talking about personnel, but if you can't look at your philosophies and level of play and say, hey, you know, we need to make tweaks here, this player needs to move around a little bit. Again, it's exactly what I say about the international stuff. What are you doing? And I think you're starting to see massive strides being made at the next level, where guys are starting to figure it out. And I'm really excited to see what the future holds.
Devin, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much. What a great final this was last night on Sunday, November the 17th. Enjoy your much-deserved vacation, and we'll be back at it in 2020.
I'll say one thing. Unfortunately for me, but fortunately, I don't hit postseason for another month. I will share with you that I've been very fortunate that I have been given the opportunity to be the head College Cup analyst this year. So I'll be stepping alongside Glenn Davis and get to cover this country at the collegiate level. But I'll promise you this, December 16th on that flight home, I'm going to have a nice margarita in hand on my flight home. I'll get a nice amount of sleep, couple months off. I'll still share some quality conversations with you, my friend. But look, anytime I get the opportunity to share the stage with you, I'm eternally grateful, and I appreciate you having me on.
I appreciate you coming on. Thank you again, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, brother. Be well.
No problem. You too. Take care. Devin Kerr, USL analyst for ESPN Plus, ESPN, USL, and US Open Cups. Congratulations to Real Monarchs of Salt Lake City, the USL affiliate of Real Salt Lake. And congratulations to Louisville City on a great year. Not the way they wanted to end it, but the future is the Lynn Family Stadium, which I cannot wait to see it open. It's going to be a lot of fun. My name's Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you for joining me tonight. Tomorrow night, USA postgame at Cuba in the CONCACAF Nations League. And then on Friday, we got a special show for you to talk about youth soccer as a whole. Once again, my name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you for listening to me tonight. And as always, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody. Take care. So long. And bye-bye for now.